Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Solutions for the Underaffiliated, the radio show for frustrated people to discover solutions to fix this mess. We're going to be talking about unserved food, but first, it's February 23rd, and that means it's Curling is Cool Day. And if you haven't watched the Winter Olympics, you really should. I'm speechless, actually, because curling is one of the best part of the Winter Olympics. And just for your information, no one on the roster is from North Carolina. Today we have Flory Pate, who's the co-founder of The Food Connection. And so, Flory, welcome. Thank you for joining us. And why don't you tell us a little bit about Food Connection and its history and whatever else you think we ought to know.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me here today, Eric and Habanero. I appreciate this opportunity to talk to your audience. So, Food Connection, we are a nonprofit that I helped launch here in Asheville about 8 years ago. And what we do is we rescue unserved prepared food from catered events, retirement centers, universities, some restaurants, and we connect this food to our neighbors who don't always have enough to eat.
Can you tell us a little bit about how it works? Go through maybe the different stakeholders. So you have the people who get the food and the donors, and then how you connect them just like it was a step-by-step.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll back up and tell a little bit of history. So 8 years ago, when I was meeting with Pax Tavern about their Dig Local Asheville, that's my husband's and my company, I was meeting with them about their account with us, and they complained to me that they had a private event space, and they were throwing away so much unserved food after events, which I didn't realize was a big problem. But then when I started looking into it, it turns out with catered events specifically, people make more food than they could possibly use because you don't know how hungry people are going to be when they come to your event. And you can't run out of food. If someone's paying $100 a head for a party, you cannot run out of food. So oftentimes there's just trays and trays of unserved, untouched food that hasn't even left the kitchen. And it was all going in the trash.
Yikes.
Right. And then, as you all know, we live in a town where a lot of people struggle to make ends meet. And our food insecurity rate here is 14%. So it seemed like a completely illogical thing that Asheville, a foodie town, has delicious, delicious food that ends up in the trash when, you know, a few miles or maybe even yards away, people are going hungry.
So is it mostly events and big organizations, or do restaurants also contribute and have extra food?
Well, that's a great question. Pax Tavern, of course, is a restaurant, but they do have a private catering space. And so because with Dig Local, we work with a lot of the restaurants, we thought after talking to Pax, we're going to let all our restaurant owners know of this service that will collect their unserved food, and then it will be floodgates of food for us. And what I learned quickly after meeting with a lot of restaurants, they don't have the kind of leftovers. I mean, like we were saying, if you have food, enough food to feed 18 or 20 people, call us, we'll come get it. And a lot of people just said, Flory, if we have food to feed 18 people at the end of the night, we will go out of business. Right. So restaurants can repurpose food, and they also are better with their margins of ordering food. So we aren't really getting much at all from restaurants per se. However, catering, buffets, and those kinds of things, that's where our food comes from. Camps and conference centers, universities. So, for instance, like UNCA, they may have cauliflower pizza crust with, you know, goat cheese, and people may love it. But people may love it, but then the manicotti just sits there. And so, you know, the kids don't want it that day. So we come and get the manicotti, and we get it to people who will enjoy it.
You mentioned food insecurity. What's the definition of that? Because I think that's one of those things that you hear all the time, but you might not really understand what that means.
Yes. So the USDA says that that food insecurity is the lack of access at times to enough food for an active, healthy life. Just think about, if you did not have access to 3 square meals a day, that's what food insecurity is. And what we're seeing is that 14% of our neighbors here in Buncombe County, that is the case. And what's staggering and shocking is that 30% of the 14% do not qualify for any federal assistance like SNAP benefits or anything because they make just too much money to qualify for anything. And y'all know from going to the grocery store, it seems like prices have doubled when you're checking out.
Tell us a little bit about the folks who actually use it. Are they already on aid? Do they have to be eligible? Can they just show up?
That's a great question. So ever since we started Food Connection, we wanted it to be a very equitable experience. We didn't want to have anybody fill out paperwork or prove their need for a meal. We started believing and always have held the belief that access to delicious fresh food is a human right. And so when we're distributing food, somebody could come to one of our drive-thrus, you know, and they might be in a nice car or well-dressed. But if they're there accessing food, there's a reason. And so we just welcome them with a smile and give them a selection of meals to choose from and send them with them and wish them well.
So it sounds like it's pretty open. It's just a trust-based kind of system.
It is. It is. And I think if someone were to get meals that really didn't need them, it's probably few and far between. But it's worth it not to create barriers for anyone to feel like they couldn't come or shouldn't come. So this has worked well for us. You don't know, like, a lot of people are just one medical emergency away from poverty or job loss. Unemployment and underemployment are one of the top drivers of food insecurity.
So it may be that there's more people out there who may be able to or who may want to use this service. How should they interact? Is there a website they can go to where you say where they can actually go to get the food? Could you tell us a little bit about where folks can typically go if they need to use Food Connection?
Right. I will. I guess I need to back up a little bit. Traditionally, what we did, our model was rescuing food and taking it to our nonprofit partners who feed people in need. So we were connecting food to places like Beloved, that was one of our launch partners, and then Salvation Army, the Veterans Restoration Quarters, and the Western North Carolina Rescue Mission. So we would take large hotel pans of food and drop it off at those organizations, which was awesome because that could alleviate some of their resources that they could spend on other missions like laundry service for the homeless or you know, Abba's House at Western Carolina Rescue Mission that helps drug addicted moms. So to free up resources is a great thing. And then also to remember that prior to Food Connection, all this food was ending up in the trash. So it's the logistics of getting it from point A to point B. But since then, we've added a service where anybody can come to one of our free curbside drive-thrus. All are welcome. Our website is food-connection.org. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook, too, to keep up with us. We're going to after-school programs with our meals. That distribution is specifically for families.
So you just drive up in your car and get food?
Yes, and we regret that transportation for some people is an issue, so they can't come. We are going directly into some neighborhoods. We hope to add more to our list of who we go to. But it's an amazing thing. We've tried to make it very equitable. So last summer, we got our very first food truck, which is amazing. You can see pictures of it in action on our website. So we can go directly to events and rescue food. We have 7 refrigerators in it, and we have stainless steel counters where we can take the large pans of food we rescue and make individual meals. And then the very cool thing is we can pop open our window so it turns into a food truck, and we have music and lights. We have a menu where people can order. I mean, some days we have pulled pork for people to order, or we usually always have a vegetarian option. So giving people choices and a menu and what feels to be a true food truck experience, except for that there's no charge.
So tell us a little bit about, it sounds like you have trucks, you have more than one. How does it work? Because it seems like this is quite an effort. If you think about all the different places who have food, this, whether it's university or whether it's a cafeteria or a catering company or whatever, someone's got to pick it up and then someone's got to put it all together and then go out and deliver it to the different places you mentioned. How does that work?
So I'm so glad you asked this question, Eric, because a lot of people wonder, like, well, it seems pretty simple. You get your food for free and then give it away. But there's so much happening behind the scenes. Our spreadsheets and stuff are pretty intricate to figure out how to move this highly perishable food to people who need it the most. So we have a great staff of people that are working on that all the time. And then meal planning with funding and help from just grants and the just general population, we can expand our reach and rescue, we're hoping to.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, what are the plans to expand, if any?
There's a lot of food that's being discarded right into the trash all over Western North Carolina, where we know we have a significant population of food insecure families and people and seniors and veterans. We're kind of like the matchmaker. And so we know if we can tap into some of the food producers and disrupt their wasteful habits of discarding food and kind of change the culture of their kitchen and then find welcome tables to get that food, that would be our goal, to just do it everywhere.
What about grocery stores?
So I know that some of our grocery stores around here, like Trader Joe's and Earth Fair, I think Food Lion, they are donating to some of our fellow nonprofits. Food Connection has not yet partnered with grocery stores, but we would be very interested in finding out what everybody's doing with their prepared food, like their hot bar items or their deli cases. So we would love to figure out a way to rescue that food.
So that's your distinction. You focus more on prepared food.
Yes.
That
Thank
is
you for clarifying
great
that.
Because, you know, that I think is one of the problems that someone who's food insecure might not have a kitchen to be able to cook up a can of beans or a bag of potatoes or something.
Right. And all of our meals are heat and serve meals. And so we do that for food safety reasons. So they're always very well balanced with a protein, a starch, and a vegetable. They usually weigh anywhere between a pound or a pound and a half. So some people can stretch it to two meals. And really, you just have to heat them up to, I think, 165 degrees and then enjoy them. So that is how Food Connection is different. And we're just doing prepared food.
Describe the folks who typically, you know, use Food Connection, anything about them. Just help people understand the scope. How many people do you think there are and what's their life like?
Well, I think we see a very diverse group of folks that are coming to our drive-through, and we see a lot of seniors, and we see families. There are lots of single moms. We often see people that are almost apologetic, like, I never thought that I would ever need to access a free meal. And we just make them feel comfortable as we can and just say, you know, this food is for everybody. As far as the problem, like, why are these folks food insecure? We definitely know that historically, through systemic racism and policies that have been in place for decades, that has caused more people of color to have a higher rate of being food insecure. And so we are trying to be very equitable and trying to find ways just chip away at that problem.
So are there specific places where folks can go, or how does that work?
The Rescue Mission, we are dropping off food there, and the Veterans Restoration Quarters, I believe you have to be a veteran to access those meals, and then Salvation Army.
Tell us a little bit about how there comes to be this surplus, because I know it's coming from these large organizations. They must plan. A lot of them are not new. They've been in business for a while. You would think that they would maybe be able to manage their food and more in line with demand. What are you seeing?
Yes, I did not realize how huge this problem was until I started kind of looking into it after that initial complaint about Pax Tavern saying that they would have to throw away so much food. But I'm going to tell you all some statistics that floored me, absolutely floored me. 40% of all the food we produce in the United States is wasted. 40%. This equates to 119 billion pounds of food every year. And if you're like me, I'm a visual person. So if you can imagine the Pasadena Rose Bowl, it holds 90,000 spectators. We waste enough food in this country every single day to fill up this whole stadium twice every single day. That's how much food is wasted. And meanwhile, 34 million Americans are identified as food insecure. So there's this huge gap. The value of the food wasted in our country is $408 billion worth of food every single year. This food is wasted at every stage of production, from farmers to packers and shippers, manufacturers to retailers. The food wasted in our own homes, which is a total different story, makes up about 39% of all food waste. And if you go to our website, we have tips on how not to waste food at home. Grocery lists are a huge thing if you plan ahead. Commercial food waste makes up about 61% of all food waste. And while many people don't equate the tray of manicotti going in the trash as something that is heating up the planet, but it is. Food in the landfill heats up and makes methane gas, which is 80 times more potent than carbon dioxide. So food is a huge contributor to greenhouse gases and global warming. So those are just some staggering things that you should know about food waste. But like you said, Eric, why is there so much food waste? Well, I know this is a little bit out of our lane, but like at the grocery stores, people don't want that little misshapen eggplant, you know, they don't want the bruised apple. And so a lot of times things don't even make it to the grocery store shelves. And then people want to see the grocery store shelves stocked beautifully full of every item. Like you think about the bread aisle, you know, it's just like it's full. Nobody wants to see barren shelves. So there's a lot of overproduction and waste on that end. And as far as the prepared food that we're getting, with catered events, you cannot run out of food, period. You just can't run out of food, so you make more than you'll need. That's where we
the servers and the guests can only take so much home.
Right. Yes.
Especially if you're a tourist and you're traveling, or maybe you're at a destination wedding.
Exactly.
You don't have a house you can just take, you know, dinner for the next week.
No.
Home
and
to
Javier,
heat up.
You make a great point. A lot of these weddings are destination weddings, and you don't have a refrigerator big enough to take it. So several of our catering partners actually have a policy that you cannot take the leftover food once the event's over, because they're worried that, you know, Aunt Ida will keep it in her car and then eat it a couple of days later and get sick. So a lot of the catering companies that we work with actually tell their potential clients that they're working with Food Connection, and all of their leftover food, they can be assured that it will go to our actual neighbors in need that don't always have enough food.
That actually brings up an interesting question too. How do you manage the fragility of perishable prepared food?
Well, it's this fine dance between picking up food, and then some of it is regular pickups, like from UNC Asheville. Some of it goes into freezers, but most of it is stored in refrigeration. And then we figure out who needs it. We, you know, hold some back for our after-school distributions. And then, but sometimes if we get a huge unexpected donation, we start scrambling, you know, and like really figuring out how to move it quickly.
Do you ever have more food than you can distribute?
That, it always seems like if all of a sudden we're like, oh dear, you know, this organization can't take anymore. They said that we delivered yesterday and they are absolutely full. And then a few times we've kind of panicked, but then it's so strange. It's like we'll get a call of somebody that needs food. So it's worked out so far. But what we do know is that our going directly into neighborhoods is working. And there's so many neighborhoods that we have yet to even begin to serve. So this is very exciting, and it's not a done deal, but it looks like we may be getting some brick and mortar space to have our own kitchen to be able to repack individual meals and then take our food truck, our free food truck, into even more neighborhoods around Asheville and the surrounding areas.
So how many food trucks do you actually have?
That's funny. First we got a van. It's like a little Ford Transit van. And that's what we started out with. That was from a gift from the Western North Carolina Episcopal Diocese, which was fantastic. That was pre-COVID, maybe 5 years ago. And I heard somebody say, oh my gosh, Flory, we see your vans everywhere. And I'm like, it's one. We're just really busy. So it is a single van. And then we got our food truck. So we have one van and one food truck. But my dream would be to have a fleet of food trucks out and about every day rescuing and distributing food. It takes a lot of money and people power, but I'm hoping we can do that.
And really the logistics, when you started to explain some of the logistics, that I think is really where, because you can find people who want it.
Yep.
You can find people who are going to give it, and making that connection, as Eric brought up in the beginning, that's really probably the biggest part of the challenge.
Well, you're right. And the statistics that I told you, that 40% of the food in our country goes to waste, and you scratch your head and go, why is that, when there's so many millions of Americans that don't have enough to eat? It is 100% the connection part. Our name is very fitting. We connect to the food. That's what we do. The logistics are complex, but we've gotten really good at it. And we're very, very efficient in our practices of how we move the food. And there are other organizations around the country that are rescuing and distributing prepared meals. We're definitely not the only one. It definitely wasn't happening anywhere around here before we started Food Connection 8 years ago. But to date, we have moved over 500,000 meals.
So there's a tendency, could be a tendency, for people who are listening to think to themselves, oh, problem solved. Thank goodness for Flory. You know, we're done here. Check the box. Everyone's getting fed. What would you say to that?
Can I say hell on the radio? Oh, hell no. Or heck no. Okay. No. We definitely rely heavily on our volunteers. We have drivers out and about on a regular basis that are picking up and delivering food for us. We have paid drivers that are out and about, and we could not do this without those folks.
The question remains, though, you're solving a problem. Is there still demand? Should people be concerned that this problem's not being addressed?
People should know that we are here and we are doing what we can do to address the problem, but we can't be everywhere all the time. And we would ask your listeners, do you know of a caterer? And can you go to our website and let us know if that person is not involved? Could you make a connection for us? If you're at an event and you see that a lot of food is being wasted, can you give somebody our hotline number to see if we can arrange a pickup? If you know of different neighborhoods that the food truck would be welcomed, and perhaps you're someone who lives in a neighborhood and would like to be our liaison as we plan to roll out in more neighborhoods, that would be great information to know. We can't assume that every neighborhood wants us to roll up with our meals. We would definitely want to have buy-in from the community to see if that's even something people would want. But those are a few things that people could. And then you also ask, you know, why is there a need for this? Well, the cost of living in Asheville is 8% higher than the state average. It's 4% higher than the national average. And we also talked about, out of the 14% of the population around Buncombe County that is identified as food insecure, meaning they don't always know where their next meal is coming from, or they don't have access to 3 square meals a day, 30% of those folks do not qualify for SNAP benefits. So that is, or any sort of federal assistance. So that is a real problem. I don't know if you all know this, but in North Carolina, to qualify for SNAP benefits, a family of four, your max income before taxes can only be $55,500.
So that's your, like, a gross salary.
Yes, for a family of four. Wow. So if you make $56,000 for a family of four before taxes, you don't qualify for any federal assistance.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. So that's another tendency for, I think, people to think about really poor people use this. But you talked about people maybe showing up in a nicer car, and that could indicate a lot of things, because they still have the car, but they may not have the job.
Right.
And so things have changed. Are you seeing that more and more? Or give people a flavor of why this is more than just a really, really poor poverty problem, and it's bigger than people might think.
Well, I think the pandemic rocked everybody in ways that people have not fully recovered from. So that's part of the reason. But I also think you just don't know people's personal situations. You don't know if they've suffered from a huge financial loss because of a medical bill or an accident, or if they're having to take care of extended family. I mean, we just don't know people's situations. And so we do have the policy where we don't judge and we give meals to anybody who needs them. But I mean, if you think about it, a family of four people, I mean, to survive on, you know, before taxes are taken out, $55,000. So we do see a lot of people that are just like, they're feeling the pull of how expensive things are getting. They're trying their best. They're working two jobs and they do not have enough food to eat. We also see seniors a lot that come through our drive-thrus. And, you know, we had one woman that she came through and she just said, I live alone. I'm going through chemotherapy. I'm exhausted. I don't have the bandwidth to cook anything. And these meals have meant the world to me.
The public health emergency is ending soon, and a lot of people are going to lose their SNAP benefits. So is that something that you've heard about, or that you are figuring out how you might be able to fill more gaps with that? Or
our team has had conversations about this, and so it could be that all of a sudden, instead of having 200 meals for our drive-thru, we're going to need a lot more than that. So that's a capacity issue for us. But we're hoping, you know, with this, the potential of having this brick and mortar space where we can pack more individual meals and get volunteers to actually go in and pack meals with us, that we can hopefully be prepared to meet the need as that happens.
You know, Eric, we had a guest a few weeks ago who was fully employed, very experienced in her career. And she said at the end of the month, it's not uncommon for her to have to go find free food because they are having trouble making ends meet.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that is clear just by having this show is how these things are all connected, whether it's food or housing or transportation. All of these things are inevitably connected. So do you see, you know, this food insecurity demand rising? Over the time you've started, every year, have you noticed an increase in, or is there an increase in demand?
We started during COVID. We did our free curbside drive-thrus in Asheville and Swannanoa, and we saw a lot of people. And then it seems like, you know, it might have slowed down a little bit, but now in Swannanoa, we're going through over 200 meals in about 15 minutes. There are people lined up
down
the road waiting for us when we pull up. And as you said, Habanero, I think with SNAP benefits ending for a lot of people, that line's just going to get longer.
Wow.
Do you think you have enough supply of food? You mentioned the catering and the hotels and, you know, the universities and things like that. But are you looking for other sources of food?
Sure. We're always looking to rescue more food. And it's interesting, things this time of year are starting to pick back up. But, you know, January gets kind of quiet and you're kind of like, OK. But then as wedding season starts and we get a lot of food from Ridgecrest Conference Center, a ton of food from them, and their camps and conferences come back online, we get a lot of food. So I feel like with the capacity to repack more individual meals, right now we're just doing it on our food truck, which is not huge. Like, we need a much bigger space, but it looks like that's going to be happening really soon. So we are hopeful that we can meet the need, but we are always looking for more food.
In addition to sources of food, tell us a little bit about sources of funding. How are you funded?
That's a great question. So when I started Food Connection 8 years ago, I did not have nonprofit experience, and our church, Grace Covenant Presbyterian, gifted us $750 seed money to just see what we could do. And then, of course, as that started trickling down, I'm like, dang, what are we going to do? Let's have a party. Let's have a concert. And so we had all these musicians come and play, and it was great. And we raised, I think, like $8,000, which was awesome. But then it's like, that's not sustainable. And so we do get grant support, but oftentimes grants do not want to fund salaries. They want to fund sexy things like the food truck or something like that. And people power with Food Connection is everything. So we are always looking to raise unrestricted funds from generous individuals. We encourage people to maybe go on a monthly donation plan. Even $10 a month could help us. So we can fund folks like, you know, our mobile meals manager, our drivers, our executive director who is working her fanny off to see that the food gets moved.
What's next? How would you want us all to think about what else we can be doing?
I think that being mindful that the image of our city, the publicity that we get about being a foodie town, TripAdvisor named Asheville the number 10 on the list of best food destinations in the United States. But at the same time, in the shadows, a lot of people don't have enough to eat. So we need to be mindful of our neighbors that don't always have enough to eat and figure out what is it that we as a city can do to, you know, lift them up and, you know, let their voices be heard. I'm going to tell y'all a few more statistics that I just learned about Feeding America, and perhaps some of these will resonate with you if you're listening and will inspire you to do something to help. So when interviewed, this is Feeding America interviewing a cross-section of our food insecure neighbors around the United States. How do people stretch their food budgets? Well, you might even be faced with that right now because of the rising cost of groceries. And 79% said that they purchase inexpensive or unhealthy food. So you see this a lot with, you know, like if you can go and get a fast food meal that is very caloric and high in fat and sugar that keeps you full and for not much money, then you're probably going to get that. The thing about food insecurity too is people who are food insecure are disproportionately prone to illness such as diabetes and high blood pressure. So this is a vicious cycle of people not having enough to eat, then eating the wrong foods, and then the health repercussions of that. With child development, school-aged children, not having enough healthy food is devastating on their physical and mental health. So their risk of asthma and anemia go up. They tend to have behavioral problems, hyperactivity, anxiety, and aggression. And this is all because they're not getting enough food or enough of the right nutritious. So if those things to me are extremely alarming, when there is enough nutritious food for people in need, but it's a lot of it's going in the garbage. So what can you do if this bothers you as much as it bothers us? If you're out in public, maybe ask. If you're at a grocery store, maybe just ask the question to the manager, what are you doing with your unsellable food? And just kind of see. I mean, I feel like we could start a revolution around if enough people cared and questioned the practices of companies, institutions, organizations that are just used to discarding food. One thing that we haven't talked about is why people were throwing away food in the first place. If you're interested in that, I could go on for days. I won't go into too much detail, but when we were looking to start the Food Connection and the Food Rescue Service, we were talking to chefs that had been in the industry for decades, and they said, oh, no, it's illegal. It's illegal. There's liability, you know, get in trouble. And there was a federal law that was put in place in 1996 called the Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Food Donation Act, which says if you're operating in good faith that the food you're donating is safe, it frees you of liability. And so we read that. We're like, well, cool. We're starting Food Connection right away under that federal protection. So we educate people every day about it. Still, some people are a little nervous to get started. The fantastic update on this is that the Food Donation Improvement Act was just passed. It puts the Food Donation Improvement Act under the jurisdiction of the USDA. So there's a lot more language around what does it mean, expiration dates, and all of that. So I really think you're going to see a shift in the culture around food waste because of this.
What I'm liking a lot is we're connecting a lot of these dots, because one of the things is, you know, what is being done in Washington, and we got some good news today, so that's exciting. You know,
bipartisan. When does that happen? Yeah,
right.
Never.
Right, exactly. So that's encouraging. And the other thing that I think people need to understand is this connection between food and behavioral health and physical health. Healthy food is a better option than cheap food, because right. the cheap food is the food that has more sugar and it fills you up and it increases your odds of becoming diabetic. And we had a teacher on recently and she talked about the hyperactivity of kids. And you're talking about, let's connect some dots here. What goes on in their home, they bring to school. And if they're not eating, that means, honestly, we all know what it's like to be hangry. But when you're a kid, you're going to be more anxious and you're going to be more prone to be disruptive. So all this comes back to food and just the basic foundational things. And so that's really great that, you know, Food Connections out there connecting these dots, because it's more than just putting food on a truck and delivering it around town. What would you like to see us talking about, whether it's in the media or when we're going out around town? Do you feel like people are aware of this and talking about it in the right way?
I'm not sure. I think there are still people that truly believe that it's illegal to donate food. I really do believe that, because I've talked to so many people that believe that to be true. And I think that starting, I know I said a revolution, but a cultural shift around it. I'm old enough to remember when people didn't recycle anything but newspapers. And then all of a sudden, you know, the culture shifted so that people are looking around for the blue receptacle to put their can in.
Right.
And so that's what we hope at Food Connection, that there is a cultural shift among people in kitchens, that they all of a sudden there is a practice that first you feed people, you call Food Connection. If you can't do that, then of course compost. But however, that's at the very bottom of the hierarchy, of the EPA's hierarchy. I mean, the very first thing, if you can't reduce food at the source, is to feed hungry people. And so I'm hoping that more people will learn about us today. That's the role that I would love to lean on the media for, is to let people know they can and they should donate food, and they can find us at food-connection.org.
This whole idea of food insecurity kind of makes me sick to my stomach. If we're wasting 40% of the food, there should be no reason that anyone should be food insecure.
Right. And why do more people not do this, do the work of Food Connection? It's because it's time consuming.
It's hard work.
It's expensive. I mean, not super expensive, but it takes money. You can't do this kind of work and not have an income to pay people to help with it, because it is complex, because you're dealing with perishable food that you have to have food safety as your number one priority.
Is there a way that we could not need your services?
We hope so. Yeah. That's our ultimate goal. That's our ultimate goal, is that
running out of customers.
Yes, running out of customers. In which case, maybe the food rescued could just go to anybody. But our hope is that we would be out of business.
What would it take to do that?
Well, I think that we need a fleet of thousands of our food trucks and just incredibly efficient systems in place and a lot of money. We are a long, long way from being able to eradicate hunger in the mountains. As hard as we work every day to do that, it's going to take the whole community.
Are you seeing a lot of working poor?
Yes.
And yes. So maybe the issue is they're not getting paid enough.
Right. I think that any company around here with a high cost of living should be paying a living wage. I really do. That's our policy at Food Connection. We pay our staff a living wage.
If you look at your gross income and you start to factor out taxes, transportation, rent, most people have a cell phone. People probably have cable. You add all that up, the amount of money you've got for food gets small really, really fast.
Right.
And so I feel like there's just all of these things are connected, and they seldom are as simple as just food or just a living wage or just housing. It's all how we live, how folks live. And there's a gap. That's why we see this gap between wealth and poverty. And that's kind of what this is addressing, is helping to solve that problem.
Right. I hear you on that, Eric. And if people are just tuning in, one statistic that will probably surprise you is that in Buncombe County, our rate of food insecurity, meaning you don't have access to 3 square meals a day, is 14%. And of that 14%, 30% of those neighbors of ours who don't have enough to eat don't qualify for any federal assistance because they make a slightly too much money.
You know, you talked about the living wage, and I just whipped out my little calculator. So $17.85 an hour, that's a $37,000 salary
annually, yeah.
Which is less than $50,000 is the threshold for family of four.
Family of four, yes. Right.
So two people working living wage jobs barely make that threshold.
Right.
I think that's a really good statistic for people to think about. We've got to go. The food insecurity problem is not just for what we stereotypically as the poor. It's a growing problem. At 40% of the food waste in this country, we really should think about how we use food. It's a resource we've got, and it doesn't seem like we're managing it very well. Flori, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Habanero.
Have a great day, everybody.
Pleasure.